To hear the present Chatham County DA tell it, her office is focusing on the prosecution of serious violent felonies, which is her excuse for not handling cases for victims she considers lesser than. What she is hiding with her rhetoric should have all of Chatham County going to the polls for change. Something that I think is so vital to this race, and is obviously, you know, this something that I can go on and on and on about. I want to talk about what's happening with serious violent felonies here in Chatham County. And I want to give this a little bit of context because people have been watching this race. I don't think they understand that when the elected DA, when Ms. Jones puts out statistics, she's putting out like national statistics and things like that. When you're talking about what's happening, where are your stats coming from?
Well, the statistics that I'm working off of is literally pulling the cases out of the court system. And so what I'm looking at is the cases that are currently in Chatham County that are being prosecuted in Chatham County. And the numbers that I'm getting are literally going into every single case and looking to see what happened with that case. And it's scary to see what's happening. I mean, we have the serious violent felonies, the people that are getting bonds on those cases and committing murders afterwards. I mean, we've had 18 murders in the last year and a half that have just over a year and a half that were out on not just one, sometimes two, sometimes three, sometimes four other felony cases where they receive bond on, most of them with guns, and then they get out because they're not afraid to do anything because they see there's no repercussions for their actions. And so they go out and they murder somebody. And so there's 18 of those currently. We have 35 people out on bond for murder within the last 3.5 years. We have 19 alone in the last 18 months.
That is insane. And you know, I got a lot of prosecution. It's all felony. I did major case for a long time. I would be embarrassed.
Yeah.
And especially embarrassed to stand up in front of citizens in this county and say, that's good.
It's not good.
It's not good. And so you've looked at what's happening with these serious violent felonies. Tell me what you're seeing aside from, I mean, obviously the being out on bond and committing another felony is horrific because that is an automatic condition where bond should be revoked.
Yes. And that's the thing that I'm noticing is that when they get another felony, their bonds aren't being revoked. And, you know, the DA will say, well, bond is set by the judge. But the amount of cases that you will see that go through the justice system where a case is not indicted within 90 days, the judge at that point has no choice but to set a bond. Or a case where somebody gets out on a bond because it's their first offense or second offense or whatever, and then gets another felony, and that bond is not revoked, and they get out and get another bond. I mean, that is the ethical responsibility of a prosecutor, is to make sure that the community is safe. I mean, that is your Article 2 of your Constitution, is to make sure that people's property and lives are saved. And if you are not doing that, then you are not doing your job. I mean, your number one ethical obligation is to uphold the law of the state of Georgia. And if you're not protecting the people of this county and the state, then you are not doing your job.
Exactly. So one of the things that you file a motion to revoke bond, and it's not a complicated process. I've done this a lot. But one of the major grounds is likelihood of committing another felony while out on bond. You have proof of it. It's not complicated, but nope. It's not an automatic. The judge can't revoke their bond unless there's a motion brought.
That is correct.
So we're just not doing it because we don't care.
I'm that's what I'm guessing is occurring. And the funny thing about that is because all the new prosecutors that came into that office and are now doing felony cases, these are the things that we train them to do. Now, I don't know why they are not doing that, but the motions to revoke bond that I created and put in for them to use, they're still using those, but they're just not using them in the cases that are important. I mean, I know this DA says that we need to make sure that serious violent felonies are being done. They're not. I mean, and those are your most important cases because those are the ones that affect our community the most.
Right. That sense of being safe. I don't know how many people I've talked to who are like, I just don't want to go downtown at night.
No.
And these are people who have lived in Savannah their whole lives. And we've had some bad times in this city. And I've been here a long time, but even with that, this is the worst I've seen.
Yeah.
So that's terrifying. Tell me what else you're seeing.
Well, so and I'm gonna take this one case, and it's kind of a backdrop to the things that are happening in that office. So recently, we had a case where 11 people were shot in Ellis Square. Now, prior to that occurring, this individual had a misdemeanor charge for possession of a gun while being a minor. And we were working with him through Youth Intercept program. But once I left the recorder's court and I was given a new designation to work in a different courtroom, they basically dismissed that case and did not follow up with that kid. That kid then went out and had a fleeing and eluding where he had a gun in the vehicle with another individual. That individual then went out and had shot two people in City Market. He got, in that case, 2 years to serve. They never indicted the felony fleeing and eluding. They still haven't indicted the felony fleeing and eluding. If they had done that, he would have been in jail at the time. But as it worked out, he got out of jail on his 2 year sentence that he got for shooting two people. And as soon as he got out, within a month, was involved in the 11 person shooting.
Oh my God.
Yes. And then they couldn't find him for a while. But this is the situation where if you had done your job and had followed up on all those things, you would have had him in jail at the time, because the fleeing and eluding sentence by itself is a year minimum to serve, and any
Right.
sentence above that would be consecutive. So he would have been in jail at the time this 11-person shooting occurred, but he was not.
That it's pretty terrifying. And you also talked, and I don't want to go off of serious violent felonies too much, but you talked about Youth Intercept. What was the purpose of this program? Because it doesn't seem like it's being used anymore.
No. So Youth Intercept program, and it's still around, and they still do things with the kids. But the basic principle is that we would have a contract with the hospital. So when somebody gets shot, or that we go in and we talk and we deal with the family members of the person that was shot and killed, so that we can get in there first to make sure that that kid does not go out and commit any kind of offense in revenge of what happened.
Right.
And on top of that, we're also getting the kids that were down that path already, where we are likely to see them, whether they're in a gang or we've caught them with a gun before or something like that, where we get them into that program so that we can rehabilitate them early enough so that they don't end up in prison for the rest of their life for murdering somebody.
Right. And so this was a program, obviously, that it started a long time ago. It started under Larry Chisholm, actually,
Yeah.
when I was still in the office. And then Meg was trying to beef it up. I know when she was DA, you got involved with it. I don't even remember when you got involved with it, truly. Do you?
So I got involved with it because of John Bush got in there, and I was
Oh, what
part
a
of,
good guy.
yes,
Oh, John
great
Bush is
guy.
fabulous.
And so it was part of being involved with the End Gun Violence Project that we had, the End Gun Violence program that we had. And so we would go out and speak to high schoolers and kids in middle school and kids that basically we can see that are already carrying or are in trouble already. And we didn't want them to go down that road. So we would go in at the high schools and speak with them. And so that's kind of how I got involved with the Youth Intercept program. And the nice thing about the Youth Intercept program is that John trusted me. And so anytime he had a kid that he's like, we got to do something with this kid. We got to get involved now. And so we would immediately get that kid out of the area that he was in, whether it be in a boot camp or something like that, to make sure that we get involved early on so that we can prevent them from going down the wrong path. And I will say they had a great success, but I
What
don't know
happened
what's
to John?
happening with it currently. John went and worked for the city of Savannah in a similar kind of gun violence program that they have. And I don't know what he's doing currently, but yes, he would speak at different events and different functions about
Yeah, but he used to be with the DA's office,
He
and
was.
that institutional knowledge, much like yours, is gone.
It's gone. A lot of the people that we had have gone.
Yeah. So, and I that
There are
brain
almost
drain, we could go
50
on. I
prosecutors.
know, we could go on and on about that. We are going to talk about that as a separate issue, I think. I want to get back to the serious violent felony thing. So we had talked about, you looked at dispositions of cases too.
So at first I looked at different, so I looked at the murder cases and see how many of those had reoffended, how many of those were out on bond. And I would say total, because WTOC did their own research on that as well. And at one point they had said that the DA's office had pled down 27 cases. And this was at the end of 2022, had pled down 27 cases. Now there have been multiple cases pled down to involuntary. One case got 10 years probation. And so I looked
Wow.
at some of those dispositions, and the
Wow.
one, there were a couple of cases that really struck me, and I just didn't understand how these things happen. And in the one case, it was two kids that were shooting guns in Yamacraw.
Now, this is a, for people who aren't really familiar with Yamacraw, we're talking about a housing project that is full of people.
Yes, that's correct.
And you've also got SCAD traffic that goes in through there all day, every day. So not a safe place to be firing a gun. This is not
No.
like out in a field.
No, they were literally firing guns into these buildings, just shooting them off. And the one kid got in front of the other kid and he ended up shooting the kid in the back of the head.
Oh my God.
And so at the plea, the victim, who is the grandmother, came in. And what shocked me the most is that the grandmother was just distraught. And it seemed like the only contact she had with that office was the day before the case went for a plea.
So we're talking about the DA's office, and again, this is a constitutional obligation on behalf of the DA's office to reach out to victims and to talk to them about what's going on with their cases, making sure that they understand, what the charges are, why they are what they are. You're just explaining this, the whole circumstance to them, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's what you're obligated to do. It's part of Marcy's law that you have to involve the victims in these cases. And this is a case that was played out this year in
Oh
February.
my
So
God.
it was not something that was 3 years ago when she first started. It's a case that just recently happened. And they pled that case down to probation. And the grandmother, in her statement, she says, I was trying to figure out, I called yesterday to figure out how could y'all charge him with manslaughter, even though I know the defendant did, my grandson did go out and did what he did, but the individual that shot him left him to die. He walked off, he ran off and left my grandson to die. So how come he wasn't charged with, more than manslaughter? This is a statement of a victim that has not been talked to, was not explained to the process, and why they were pleading this kid out to this lesser charge.
That's horrifying.
Yes.
And I think that this is, again, when you see these things, and I know you have more examples. I've seen it. I've actually had to practice in Chatham County courts recently. As a part-time prosecutor in Effingham, I had a conflict case that was assigned to me. I've seen it. And you see these victims' families come in and they have no idea what's happening with their cases. No one is talking to them. And that is not the fault. And I want to make this clear. You've got some really good victim witness people who are still there,
We have great witness, victim witness
but
people.
they're overwhelmed and the prosecutors aren't talking to them.
Well, and I think the problem with that is, and I will say this because I've heard this from people who have left the office, is that they are very concerned about the ramifications of violating the non-disclosure agreement that the DA put in place.
Oh my God, really?
Yes. So,
I'm sorry, you have an a constitutional obligation to talk about a case,
yes.
and you're more worried about an internal mandate that is non-enforceable.
Yes, and because
Okay, tell me about this non-disclosure.
so the non-disclosure agreement, it personally, you're in a government office, so any non-disclosure agreement would be invalid and unconstitutional.
Yeah, we're subject to open records. I mean,
Exactly. So we have to. But the problem that I have learned from talking to parents of victims and victims themselves is they would call over to that office and they would basically not talk to them or tell them who the prosecutor is on their case. They would not talk to them about the case itself. They wouldn't even tell them when the next court date is on those cases. These people had to actually go and call the media to find out what happened with their case, or call the clerk's office, which is ridiculous.
and again,
And
not legal,
no,
right? Because
100% not
victims
legal.
have a right on anything from felony theft up, have a right to be heard on the disposition, on
Yes.
anything where someone's going to be released, like a bond hearing or just any of those things. They have a right to be heard, they have a right to be present, and they have a right to know when court is.
Yes, exactly. They
That's
do.
insane.
They
So
have a
you,
constitutional right to hear that.
God. What are we doing? I'm sorry. You have other examples.
So the other example that I have, I mean, there's multiple of these cases, but I'm just giving you some of the some different types of cases. And so the other case that I found that I thought was really troubling, and again, these are cases that were not handled, right at the beginning of COVID or anything like that. This is a case that was handled in 2022. And in this case, the prosecutor had to lay out a factual basis for this rape case that they had reduced down to a sexual battery and an aggravated assault and gave the guy probation. So this is a rape case where the guy should be in prison, is now basically just on probation.
Right. So, and I just want to clarify for listeners, rape has a mandatory minimum of 25 to serve. You can do a downward departure under certain circumstances, but they're minimal. But there is a reason that we treat these cases so seriously because of the damage it does to victims. And
Yes.
I think you saw some of that with this, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So in this case, the individual that was charged was friends with the victim's brother, and he was also there was another person there. But in any case, they came to the house where the brother lived. The sister was there, and they left the house, and the defendant came back to the house to say that he was looking for a phone charger. Left the house, then came back a short time later because he couldn't find that. And when he came back, while he was there, the victim in this case reported that this defendant began making sexual advances and overtures toward her, which she indicated to him she was not interested in. And then at some point, he forcefully forced himself on her by placing his hand on her throat, trying to kiss her, and pinned her wrist to her chest. And ultimately did push her back onto her mother's bed in the residence and engaged in sex with her without her consent, and then left. This is the factual basis that the DA's office put on the record. This is a clear case
Of
of rape.
right.
And so I don't
Well,
understand. It doesn't
and aggravated
even.
assault strangulation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And so on top of that, so you have these two cases. Well, they decided to reduce that down. And what bugged me the most about this whole thing is hearing the victim give her a victim impact statement in this case, and just how horrendous this was for that person to live through, because she didn't understand exactly what was going on. But she states that on July 7th, one of the worst things that could happen to a woman I experienced in my own home. The crime that this defendant committed against me changed my life forever. There are no words or no penalty that will compensate for the daily struggle I deal with due to this heinous crime. I do not know what life may have in store for this individual, but I pray he understands the ramifications of his actions and know it's not okay to force someone to do something against their will, as well as understand the words no means no. I want the defendant to know that he did not break me, although I struggle with his daily actions. Some days are better than others. However, I am a survivor because God got me. And the judge, when he sentenced the individual, told him the same thing that said, "Mr. Defendant, I want you to understand that no means no." Clearly indicating that this was a rape, and
Yeah.
yet this individual got probation.
Well, and so this is something that I have heard, and I'm sure you have too, from people who've left the office. And from people involved in the system, because obviously we still are friends with people and know people involved in the system.
Yeah.
A judge can reject a plea.
Yes.
And they have. I mean, I went back in the day when I was prosecuting, I had cases where the judge rejected the plea and you have end up having a trial. You have a trial because some of these cases are serious and you need to. And that's the way it goes. However, I understand that at this point the judges are accepting pleas that they normally would not. And part of their rationale, number one, is they've got to move cases and there's backlog, which we can talk about at some point too. And that is not backlog created by Meg Heap. That is backlog created by this office as it stands right now. But it is also because the judges don't trust the DA's office to actually be able to do what they need to do to prove these cases in court and get a conviction.
Yeah.
So they're just willing to, like, okay, we'll give you probation, and look the other way,
Yeah.
which is horrifying. I mean, that so the judges don't even trust them
No.
in the system.
No.
You mentioned to me another case that had a sexual assault in the middle of a bunch of bonds.
Yes.
Tell me about
So
this.
there was another case, and this individual originally was arrested, and that's the first contact that the DA's office had with this case. And so he was already out. He already had three cases,
Oh my God.
and as part of these cases, he get it was consented to. This is a consent bond that was given to him. So the DA's office signed off on this bond, and I thought it was kind of crazy that an individual charged with rape would get a $1,000 bond.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
Exactly. I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of it either. That is insane.
Never.
That is insane.
It is insane that, and so this was consented to by the DA's office, and an order was prepared in this case, and the individual was given this bond knowing that he had other cases already
Wait, the consent bond is on all three cases.
on
So
all three
you got
cases.
rape.
You got a property damage claim, and then you've got I forgot what the other case was, but he had three pending felony cases, not
Did
misdemeanors.
these all involve the same victim?
Two of them did.
Oh my God. So
Yeah.
what is this poor victim supposed to think about? I called the police and I did what I'm supposed to do. What does she get out of this?
I don't know. But see, and this is the thing
Wow.
that we were trained as prosecutors, when you are looking at a case, that you have to look at the entire history of an individual. So in this case, he had already had a TPO against him for stalking another victim. He tried to run that victim off the road with his vehicle. So a TPO was granted against him for that individual. On top of that, he then decided that he wanted to make sure that the person that he raped, but prior to the rape, did not leave the house. So he kicked this car door and damaged the vehicle, and then poured sand into the gas tank to make sure that that car was not drivable.
So
Well,
that victim couldn't leave.
so that victim couldn't leave. But unfortunately for him, he poured it in a different person's vehicle. So that person came out and took out warrants for him for damaging her vehicle. Then he got the rape case. So those are three cases already. And that what bugged me the most about this is that as a lawyer, you're supposed to read the things that are put in front of you before
Right.
you present it to a judge. But
Yeah.
in this case, not only did they give him a $1,000 bond, they ordered him to go back to the house by saying that he shall have no violent or harassing contact with the victim. And then on top of that, what made it worse is that they ordered him to have a gun because they said he shall own or possess a firearm, replicas, and ammunitions.
So he is ordered by the court to go out and get a gun. Is that how that reads?
That's exactly how this
And I'm
reads.
sorry, someone who is considered a senior prosecutor in the present office signed off on that.
Yes, they absolutely did.
What happened after that?
So right after that, he got out, and about 2 or 3 months later, he tried to kill this lady.
Same victim.
Same victim. Aggravated assault against the
What are
same
we doing?
victim. I have no idea what they're doing over there. And these are the things that I saw, and that because originally I never thought about running for DA, But when I see these things happening, and it happens over and over, this is just a very small percentage of the cases that are occurring there. And there's so many more of these things that are happening.
Well, I want to make it clear. You're saying it's a small percentage. Is this, we're talking about a small percentage. It is not a small percentage that they are screwing up in this way.
No,
It
no.
is a very large percentage. I've
It
seen some of
is.
it myself.
Yes.
So this isn't a drop in the bucket. This is why we have the level of crime we have right now.
Yes, exactly. Because people aren't afraid. There's no retribution. There's nothing that stops them from doing the same things over and over. And these are the things that not only I worry about because I have kids and I have to make sure that they go to school and that they're safe, but other people's families have to be safe. And the mayor's kid complains about it. The city council people complain about it. There are multiple people in this community that complain about it. And then you have a DA that says that she cares about these violent crimes when you look at the statistics, 90 to 95% of the murders and people who are killed in this community are African American. In 1 year, we had two white people killed, and the rest of them were African American. So, I mean, you're not doing any service to your own community when you're not doing anything to prevent them from going out and doing the same thing over and over without fear of any kind of retribution. And when you give them lenient plea deals and sending them out on probation, because I'll tell you, some of the people that are on probation for murder have violated their cases multiple times.
So wait a minute. So we're talking about like that involuntary manslaughter. They reduce a murder to involuntary manslaughter. They put somebody on probation. That person violates their probation. We're doing nothing.
Nothing. They keep their first offender in most cases too.
Oh my God.
Yep.
So I think that on the ground, if you're a victim, right? Or if you're the family of a victim and you see this happening over and over again, what's the message?
That you need to go take justice in your own hands. That's a
Oh my
big
God.
problem.
And
That's
well, right, it is, obviously.
because if you lose faith in the justice system and in the court system and in your DA's office, then there's no other recourse for you but to take the justice into your own hands. And that is not what we want in this county.
Right, the rules need to mean something. They need to apply to everybody all the time, period, regardless of background or anything. I mean, the rules are the rules. Period. And I'm at such a loss because again, that has been my standard from day one. I think you talked about it. It's like
Yeah,
when a victim comes in, what happens? Do you talk about politics or what do you talk about?
No, so I mean, then that's the thing, and people always ask me, well, who do you support? What's your political background? I'm like, I don't care about that. And this is the thing about the DA's and the DA and the DA's office is that we are not supposed to care about what your political background, what your political leaning is. When you walk into our office, we have to protect everybody. We have to talk to you no matter what your background is, what you've been through. We have to make sure that you get the justice that you're supposed to get in that case. And so we have to treat you just like everybody else. And so I never understood why this is a political issue and why people use this office in a political manner to get out whatever they want to get out. But the problem with making it political is that you're saying to people out there that if you are from this one party, that we will not prosecute those cases. And clearly, in this case, I don't know what the issue is, but like the people need to be protected. No matter what their background is, no matter what's going on, they need to be protected because people in this county should not be the ones. And if you drive down some of the neighborhoods, you'll see they are behind bars. They have to live behind bars because they're afraid of those people that keep coming out, keep getting released on bonds. And those are the ones that should be behind bars, not the people in their own homes.
I absolutely agree. I mean, we want a free society. And in order to have that, the rules have to mean something.
Yes.
And so I think you mentioned something also when we were talking about some of these serious violent felonies before. There was some statistic involving rapes, like 15 rapes. What was that?
Yes. So I looked at some of the rape cases that came out in the last year, year and a half. And I will say this, 70% of the people that have gotten charged with rape were released on bond. And like I
What?
said,
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
70% of them,
whoa, 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 whoa. Rape is a serious, it's one of the seven deadly sins. on by statute.
And some of them is because they didn't indict him within 90 days. And some of them are, I mean, I have the one guy that was given a $1,000 bond. I have another guy that was on a $1,500 bond, then got arrested again for another serious injury with DUI, which means he was drunk driving a vehicle and then almost killed somebody. And I was just saying, there's another case, got out on bond, and that case is still not indicted. And this is since, I mean, these are cases that happened since 2023. I mean, this is, I'm not talking about the entire reign of her, of the current DA. I'm talking about within the last year, year and a half, these are the people that are getting bonds. And so there is absolutely no protection for victims when these things come out. And you can say, don't have contact, but there's no way to enforce that when they're actively going to their house, actively going to their door, and you consent to bonds where you're telling them to go back to the house and get a gun.
That's so comically bad. I mean, it's so embarrassing because that looks like a form order too. Like, oh, this is my consent order, has go get a gun. Are you kidding me? Because it's like the middle sentence. It's not like I don't know. I mean, I don't
There's
even
only
know.
five sentences on this page. How would you not read that? I mean,
Oh my
that's
God.
just horribly bad.
When we're talking about, and you've now mentioned multiple cases that are special victims cases, these are domestic violence, these are rape cases. We had an SVU.
Yes, we did.
What happened to that?
I will say, I sh the plan that they have is they got rid of the MCD cases, which is your major crimes, and they got
Well, and
rid
I
of
know
the,
that that came from Judge Friedman, which
yes,
I understand
to,
her rationale. I don't agree with it entirely, and I don't think it is had the success she was hoping for.
no, and I think it was, it used to be that way, and then they changed it so that we could have these serious crimes be monitored and watched
Hey,
and
I was
prosecuted.
there through the whole transition, so yeah, I get it.
And so what happened then is that with that change happening, they decided to take all your specialized units and just give them all of the cases. So all your specialty prosecutors were used to having these type of cases now have to deal with all the other cases on top of the cases that they had. And the cases that they had been working on now got divided to other people. So those people did not understand what was going on with those cases. And so you have people that are not trained in rape cases, that are not trained in child molestation cases, that are not
Oh my
trained in those
God.
type of cases, that have to go in and try a case without knowing what the damages are to the victims, what the emotional damages are to them, that don't know how to come up with the evidence in those cases or how special those cases are, or what like Rape Shield law applies in these cases. And so
Yeah,
you'll
that's
see
huge.
those.
Well, and you've got child hearsay. There are very specific rules that are
Exactly.
involved in these special victims cases, and how you talk to those victims about court and about prosecuting and about testifying is so important, and especially children, because you don't want to influence them, but at the same time, you want to offer them services and support and all the things they need. And those exist in Chatham County. We have Rape Crisis, we have the Advocacy Center, we have these great resources, but it doesn't sound like we're working with them.
No.
So yeah, the lack of special victims unit, I think, is it is damaging on like almost like I don't know how to put it any other way than biological. Like it's like on a cellular level. You're talking about this woman who gets raped in her home. She's never going to feel safe again.
Nope.
Never
She's never.
anywhere,
Nope.
anywhere. And it's like her brother's friend. You've got to find a way to have a conversation with that person, and you've also got to find a way to make it right for the community, because this is clearly somebody who doesn't have boundaries. This is a defendant who does not understand where the boundaries are.
And see, and this is the other thing, and I think this is where the previous DA had a concept. She understood victims and she understood victims' rights. And another thing that we lost when the new administration started was the Family Justice Center, where we gave them those services, where you had specialized people go in and talk to them, you had treatment, you had a safe place for them to sit and wait for trial. I mean, like, those are the things that are very important, because if you can have a victim be in a safe space and speak to somebody about what's going on with their case and have all the services in one place, That is very vital to some of these cases, so that that person knows that we're doing something for them, and then that they feel good about being protected when they do have to go in and testify. I mean, I cannot tell you how many of these victims are afraid to go to court. I mean, I would say, I mean, it's a high number, like 90% of those victims do not want to come in and talk about what happened to them because they're afraid of what that person is going to do or going to say or stare them down or if they're going to say something wrong. But that's the whole point of the Family Justice Center, was to make sure that they feel comfortable, that they have people to talk to them, that the prosecutor has one place to go where they can talk to 10, 15, 20 victims at the same in one spot and talk to them about their case and make them feel good about those. But now you have a person that has never had any training handling that case, and they go through prosecutor through prosecutor prosecutor. I mean, I have one lady who had a rape case, an attempted rape case, and she was raped close to a graveyard. And she said that she went through at least nine different prosecutors on her case. She was never told about any of the things that were going on with her case.
Oh
She was never told until the day of the plea hearing what the actual plea hearing was, and it changed the day of court too.
my
So while she
God.
was sitting there, and so she feels absolutely no justice was done in her case. And this is multiple victims. I mean, on my Facebook page now, where my well, while I'm running for DA, I have so many victims saying, I don't hear anything from the DA's office. I don't get told anything from the DA's office. They don't tell me when my cases are. They don't tell me when my bond hearings are. I'll get to court because I'm told to be there, and then the case is continued without notifying me that the case was continued prior to. And then they tell me in court that, oh no, this case was continued 2 weeks ago. Then why did you call me in? All right. I mean, like, they also have to work. They also have a job. They have to deal with this. They have to get themselves mentally prepared to be in court to face the person that did these awful things to them. And so they have to go through the PTSD and be prepared and be ready. And then you tell them when they get to court, oh no, we continued this case 2 weeks ago. That's horrible.
That is horrible. And again, communication, and it's always hard. I mean, it's always hard. There's a large volume of cases, period. It's hard. It's still your job.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
the job is hard.
It
The
is.
job is hard. And as if mishandling of rape cases was not enough, the current DA is playing politics with murders as well. One more thing that's happening with these serious violent felonies. We had six murders dismissed in what, August? Is it August?
Yeah.
Around the time elections start
Yep,
getting
we
kind of
did.
hyped up. What do we know about that, if anything?
Well, like I said, I don't know the specific facts around the cases, but I know that of those cases that were dismissed, one of the cases that was dismissed involved one detective that had another case where she may have done an illegal search warrant or wrongfully put somebody on a search warrant. And so based on that,
We're talking about Ashley Wood.
yeah. And so
Okay.
she got terminated. Well, originally not terminated, but then
She
afterwards got terminated
should
when
have
she
been
got
terminated.
arrested
She
for it.
should
Yeah.
have been.
But so you had that one. But then there's five other cases that did not have that detective on it. And I will say this, you have not one detective handling a case. That detective
Yes.
is only but one small part of that
Yes.
case. And there's usually more than one detective on that case. And what bugged me most about one of the cases was that the lead detective on the case was never subpoenaed. He was actually taken off of the case. And the detective that they indicted was placed as the lead detective when he really wasn't the lead detective on the case.
Right, so we're talking the person who was actually the lead today. I'm going to call a name here because I Rob Santoro is my friend. Rob Santoro has been on this show more times than I can count because he's my favorite. No, actually, I shouldn't say that because Alan Sands is right up there, but he's not ever going to be on my show. But Rob is got more integrity in his fingernail than anybody I've ever worked with. With the possible exception of Alan. And the idea that they're covering up whatever their rationale for dismissing these cases by taking him off of it in their system and claiming it was some other detective that worked that case.
It's not, that's just so horrible.
I'm
And that's why the mayor is so
my
angry
jaw.
about it.
Yeah, because again, yeah, this is a detective. These are detectives that I know, right? And so when you have a case worked by somebody who, it's there. If he's bringing it, it's there. You should be able to work, be able to prosecute that case if you know what you're doing. But I've seen personally, and these are cases that I personally know something about, where they've dismissed gang charges because they don't know how to handle a prosecution of a gang case. We have gangs in Chatham County. We need to take this seriously and protect our community, and we're just dismissing it because, oh, we're incompetent. I'm
I
sorry,
don't
I'm going off on my soapbox.
know.
You had something else you wanted to talk about.
So yeah, and this one was a murder case that was null prost. Well, null prost means dismissed. And so I thought it was very interesting about what I thought was very interesting about this case. It was a case that was dismissed a couple of days ago. So in
So it's
22nd,
recent. Oh my
yes,
gosh.
22nd August of 2024. And this, so this case is a case that started back in 2021. And I'm not exactly sure when the actual murder occurred, but the case started in 2021 in Superior Court. And what I found very interesting about the whole thing was that this null pros came in after there had been multiple motions filed about the state not producing discovery.
Oh my
And
God. Whoa. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
well, they've been warned multiple times about discovery in other cases,
Right,
and
I
have been sanctioned by judges about not doing the discovery that they were supposed to do, and were held in contempt for that. Well, this is one of those cases where they were not held in contempt, but the judges had multiple times ordered that they provide discovery, and they did not. And so it was no
So
surprise to
you're
me
like,
when I saw a null pros
yeah, so
on
you're
this
like in
case,
a hair's breadth
and it's a
of.
murder case.
So I know, like, toward the end of my tenure in the DA's office, there had been a couple of those that occurred as well. And you can have that with turnover, right? When you have a lot of turnover, you have people who are just unable to find the case file. I have been contacted this year about a murder case. Like, hey, do you have this file? No, I don't. I didn't, like, I don't keep, I left that office. Do you have like this file? I haven't touched it since 2019. I don't know what you people did with this. I can't help you with that. Sorry. I mean, they've had so much turnover and they've changed the structure so much. It is their responsibility to, if they don't have it, go to the agency and say, hey, I'm missing this. Let's reconstruct this. It shouldn't be that hard.
Nope. Because they have all of the evidence, and I don't know what they do with it.
Do not be deceived by Shalena Cook Jones' claims that she is doing the work that needs to be done on serious violent felonies in Savannah. The only way to make your community safer is to vote for Andre Pretorius for DA in November.